Wow. I'm sure there's a certain, and one of them was in Sarasota, if you tie up your elephant on the street corner, you have to pay a deposit or something like that. And I'm sure that comes from the Ringling Brothers Circus. You know, that's where they're based out of. So. I read that too. Yep, that's right. Everybody hear what Zach said?
Not allowed to carry ice cream in your back pocket in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah.
Someone lost a prize racing horse because of ice cream in the back pocket.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, someone lured a horse off of
it. He followed him out? Oh, okay. Yeah, there's always I'm sure there's a reason for it. We knew the backstory on them. So. We'll continue our study on evangelism. Just to kind of give you an update, last week I was telling you about on October the 5th, there was a nationwide, what they call Brotherhood-wide Day of Evangelism or something like that. It had 550, roughly, congregations of Churches of Christ to participate. And I still have not seen the results of that. But in this month's Christian Chronicle, there was a little short story about it. And they have reported that one congregation in Jackson, Mississippi, knocked on 93 doors and set up 31 Bible studies. That's just one congregation in Mississippi. So once I ever find out what the total results was, I'll pass that along to you. But you have a handout there. We're starting with prayer is the catalyst in evangelism. Now, it kind of goes to say that you should always start just about anything with prayer, but prayer is often...
Not just about everything.
Everything, yeah, excuse me. But you don't usually hear about prayer being emphasized in evangelism, and that's kind of what we want to talk about just for briefly this morning, and then we'll get into some other things. If the providence of God is at work and it involves the lives of those who are prepared to be used, as well as those who are seeking the truth, it should be easy to see that prayer would play an important role. And if you remember the first week or so, we talked about Cornelius, how he prayed to God for someone to send someone to teach him. And then along the same lines, Peter at the same time was praying that God would send him to someone to teach. So Paul taught the Colossians. Paul also taught the Colossians to pray that God would open a door for the word in Colossians 4:3. So when we're preparing for evangelism, we should always start with prayer. We're not going to a deep study in prayer because 3 months or 4 months ago we had 13 weeks of it. So you can go back and listen to those. They're still on the website, the recordings and the handouts. But it just makes sense that when we talk about evangelism, we start with prayer. Preparation for evangelism is like preparing to make a sales pitch. People think that if you follow the right procedure, the desired results will follow. So we're finally going to get to the parable of the sower or parable of the soil. Depends on how you look at it. Generally, this is one of the first studies that you have in evangelism, but we've put it at the end. The power is in the seed is our first point. When we're talking about the seed in the parable, what are we talking about? The Word of God. The Word of God has always been capable of influencing people and accomplishing its intended purpose. As the author of Hebrews wrote, it is best alive and powerful. This is especially true of the gospel of Christ, the power of God into salvation, as it says in Romans. If people are going to be truly converted, it will not be through smooth speech or fancy presentations involving high-tech equipment, but through the life-changing truth of the gospel. We can use modern aids to present the gospel, but we must make sure that they are faithfully communicating the word. True conversion will only occur if we plant the proper seed. We may not get the desired result because we don't sow the right seed. But even when we plant the proper seed, we often do not see the desired results. Understanding the reason why helps us maintain the right perspective. Any questions so far? The results depend upon the type of soil. So when we're talking about soil, What are we referring to? Soil in the, in this parable. The who? People's hearts. I heard somebody else over here. Hearts. Hearts of who? Primarily. The seekers or non-believers and that sort of thing. And just to go ahead and get it out of the way, when we talk about the sower, who are the sowers? Us. Usans. In the parable of the sower, which is in Matthew 13, the same seed, when sown, produced different results. One had no reaction whatsoever. Two others had only temporary success. And only one out of the four resulted in bearing fruit. So was there a problem with the seed? Question? No. Was there a problem with the sower?
Could be.
Could be, maybe. But primarily no, is what we're looking for. So was there a problem with the type of soil? Probably. That's probably true. So according to Ezekiel 3:17 through 19, a question, what is the responsibility of the sower? To sow. Very good. I try not to make these hard.
He can locate good soil, possibly, but...
Right. Yeah.
So our parable doesn't really point that out.
Correct. So it's the soil that rejects the seed. Question, should the sower feel accountable when the soil rejects the seed? Should we feel accountable? No, we should not. So who or what is responsible, according to Matthew and Acts? Where does the responsibility lie?
The hearer.
Yeah, the soil is in the parable. So the positive implication is this. Every time we sow the seed, we are successful. If a person rejects it, we have not failed, they have. Well, that's true, but it's not our fault. That's the point. It's not on us.
Unless we put Roundup in the soil. Yeah. I mean, if we can poison somebody,
we can.
Our life.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about our lives here in a minute. Naturally, we are delighted when someone believes and truly accepts Jesus as the Lord of their lives, but we need to learn the joy of sharing Christ with others, whether or not people accept him. Instead of being concerned with the number of baptisms, how should we measure success?
Number of seeds sowed.
Number of seeds sowed, yes. Our goal should center on how many are being taught, not converted. Now that's not to be a cop-out where we don't sow the seed. We should sow as much seed as we can. But here again, like we said earlier, our goal should be on how many we teach, don't look at it as a conversion rate. So closely related to all this is the perspective concerning the place of the sower. As illustrated in the parable and elsewhere, we are simply seed throwers and water boys. One may plant the seed, another may water, but it is God who gives the increase. So how does God give this increase? When we talk about God giving the increase, how does God give this increase?
He makes the seed grow.
Yeah, but how does he do that? He waters what?
Seed.
The seed, which is what? The word, right?
He also provides the seed.
Right. He has provided the seed. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Another way to think about it also is he changes.
He does change the soil. Yeah. Sometimes you have to put weed and feed on it. That's not Roundup. That's something else. There's been no lawsuits, as far as I know, for weed and seed.
Not yet.
You know, one of the interesting things about this is, I don't know, you didn't say what the seed was, but I think...
Well, it's the word of God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the message.
Yeah.
The gospel message.
Right.
I think a lot of times we forget that there's power in that gospel.
Absolutely.
And that it has that power to convert people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times what we think of as the seed is just a kind act. That's important.
Yeah.
Trying to belittle a kind act, but a lot of times I think we forget forget that the gospel message is the actual
sin. Right. Now, the kind act can help, and we're going to talk about that here in a minute. So, yeah. Through his word in a receptive heart is the answer what we're looking for. Because of this, there is no place for boasting about numbers of people being converted. Can God use defective or non-experienced seed throwers?
Yes,
he can. We see that in Philippians 1, 15 through 18. Why? Why can he use non-experienced seed throwers?
It's not the thrower, it's the seed.
It's the seed. It's the powers in the seed, as we're saying.
Huh? He gives him,
the glory. That's the whole purpose of the whole thing. We should not feel like we have to be an accomplished salesman to present the gospel. Even those who tremble and may not be eloquent can be used by the Lord to teach others. That's 1 Corinthians 2, 1 through 5. So then there's the principle of sowing and reaping. In the parable of the sower, only 1 out of 4 produce favorable results. In sales, the ratio is much higher. Who all is in sales here? I know we got some real estate and some insurance people. How many cold calls does it make to make a sale, Albert?
Well, I don't do much cold calling, but if there's 100 leads, but you can only convert 3 or 4 on the bad end of the site.
Yeah.
If you do it right, it could be...
It'd be higher, of course.
Higher,
yeah.
You have to really... sow the right seed, I would think. You know,
yeah.
The right seed.
Yeah.
There's the message that people have heard.
First call success is rare.
Absolutely. Y'all were in sales for a while. How many cold calls do you have to make to get a sale? Dub, how many you have to make? You're in insurance and finance.
It's about 3%.
3% conversion? That's pretty good. In a way.
Well, you got to be good to do that.
No brag, just fact. In some industries, and this is something I saw, I don't have the proof of it, takes 100 calls to get 10 appointments to get 2 closed sales. So it falls within your 2%. So, but here with the sower, we're 1 out of 4, right?
But that's because the power of God is in there.
Different product. Yeah, different product. Well, it's like the church there in Jackson, Mississippi. 90-something door knocks, 31 Bible studies. That's 1 out of 3. So that's even better. Successful people in different walks of life understand that the key to success is to increase the number of their efforts. It's all a numbers game, as they say. The conclusion for us is obvious. If we desire to reap more, we must be willing to sow more. Many people fail in the area of evangelism because they sow sparingly and get discouraged by the meager results. If we increase the level of sowing, the level of reaping will rise proportionately. To avoid discouragement, we need to set goals on how many are taught, not on how many are converted. Any questions or comments? Huh?
I just reading that.
Yeah.
Where it says untaught.
Untaught. Yeah.
How many are converted.
Right. Because we're so much numbers oriented.
I think you can identify good soil too. There are people who wrote books on that actually. That ways that you can identify people who are more receptive.
Yeah.
Than others.
Yeah.
The farmer.
Kristen, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, my son this morning when we were talking, he said that there was a guy at work that wants to start an acapella group, and I said, well, you should invite him to church. And he said, oh, he's got a lot of his own views, and he's not somebody I think I want to get. And I told him, I said, that's the perfect person to invite to church.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think sometimes we get our mindset on the fact that, and I'm very guilty of it, you know, oh, this person doesn't fit the bill, this person doesn't fit the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were saying earlier, you know, just about people who aren't versed in the Bible or whatever going out there to teach, it's like just taking a handful of seed and just throwing it everywhere. Well, sometimes that's where you get your best, you know, soil, because you don't know what God's planted in those people's hearts. We can't judge that. We have to just constantly be turning this, you know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then also another one is, if you're thinking about it, a lot of the people that Jesus would have been, or they would have been talking to, is agricultural type.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here talking about just spreading seed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And from like a farmer's perspective, you're like, why would you even do that?
Yeah.
And then secondly, he's not even saying go out there and pick the rocks or weed the weeds out, which from a perspective of like what we as humans would want to do, we want to change.
Mm-hmm.
We want to change that soil into something that would be
before the seed goes in. Yeah. Yeah.
But he's just saying throw it.
Yeah.
And you're going, why would you do that?
But yeah.
It's really the perspective of like what we're being asked to do compared to like what our human instinct.
Some of it depends on how much we think God will really work and how much we think we have.
We have, yeah. Yeah.
We think we have to have the soil just right.
Yeah. It makes us look good.
Makes our numbers higher.
John?
I would just think about it from the same farm perspective.
Yeah.
Talk about the soil.
Yeah.
An experienced farmer that spent his whole life farming can recognize it.
He knows the good where the good dirt is.
Yeah. Yeah. Know where the good dirt is. And
yeah.
Then I think we look at it as like this. Somebody said, like me, I'm going to say, you know, I think starting January 1st, I'm going to be a farmer.
Yeah.
I'm going to go buy some land when you wouldn't know where to buy it.
Right.
So
right.
There's come some experience in spreading this word too, this good news, as the more experienced you are at it,
mm-hmm.
the better farmer you're going to become, hopefully.
Albert and Christina sell you some land. You had your hand up.
Yeah, I was in the car the other day with some new folks, and I always take the opportunity to tell my wife, I said, I don't care what make and model we have in the car, if it's Jewish, if it's Buddhist,
yeah.
if it's
Mormon.
You know, it's funny, I haven't been in the car with or the opportunity to preach to many Mormons, but I mean, personally, I've found myself in a situation where I've had, let's say an Asian, and I said to myself, I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna preach.
Throw it out there.
Preach Jesus to these guys right here.
Yeah.
Whether they come from a Buddhist background.
Yeah.
And we're reconnected. And the thing is that we are sowers. We're farmers. We can throw the seed, and we can hear the response by whether or not you continue. They'll either like try to avoid you, or they'll reconnect.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's because there's been seed that's fallen on them before.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, a lot of people say just sow the seed,
mm-hmm.
and the Lord will do the rest,
mm-hmm.
and maybe at a later time.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a lot of times the opportunities where there's already been seed, all mm-hmm. the seed fallen, and now we're just kind of putting it upright into the dirt,
you know,
or whatever it is to get it to come right.
Exactly.
I don't even have children have witnessed that, because you start at a younger age teaching them to pick up the toys. And when they get older and leave the house and they have their own place and you come to see them in a different city, they actually pick up their houses. So it takes that long.
Yeah.
What you're saying, your analogy is right along with the lesson, because sometimes we plant a seed and it's a long time before we see the results.
Yeah.
And
it's, it doesn't happen with 17, 18, 21, 22.
All right, let's move on. One last perspective for success in evangelism is quite often, and this is what we're talking about, one sows and another reaps. Winning souls involves both sowing and reaping. So what's the difference in sowing and reaping? Sowing is preparing hearts for the reception of the gospel, and when the hearts are first introduced to the gospel and its principles. And reaping is the actual harvesting, and those are in quotations, of what has been sown. It occurs when souls who have had the word planted in their hearts decide to obey it. Many times those who reap are benefiting from the efforts of those who did the sowing before them. In evangelism, this means that oftentimes you will be sowing the seed and it may appear that you are not getting any results. But sometime later, those souls you have you are trying to reach may decide to finally obey the gospel, and another Christian may actually do the reaping. Then again, there are times when people just sort of fall into your lap, ready and anxious to obey the gospel with different effort on your part. In this case, you are reaping what others have sown. And this is true, and close your ears, Todd. A lot of times people think the sermon is what converts people. Usually that person, before they go forward, has been converted. The sermon is just kind of a tool. You're saying no? You think the sermon converts people?
He does.
No. Well, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
There are people in here that won't express their opinion when you say some stuff like that. Because they don't
want to
argue with you.
Is that it?
But, so I just move on.
Okay, yeah. Yes, ma'am.
He got into the ministry so he could teach more people. It doesn't work that way.
No.
Because if you are the preacher,
right.
People don't want to talk to you because they think that you know more than they do. Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Everyone knows that's not true.
For sure.
People are very receptive, I'll
say
that.
I'm not saying it doesn't ever happen, but usually when someone comes forward, that seed has already been planted. So, and it's over time.
Patty and I told a young lady in Texas, and throughout the entire lesson, she was getting warmer and warmer and warmer. And after it ended, she was ready to be baptized. And her mother said her dad would be so pleased. He's been teaching her for years.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she finally believed it.
Yeah.
I think another aspect of this is the watering.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times, once that seed's planted, it takes a lot of watering to get that person sometimes
yeah
to respond to their gospel.
Yeah,
that's what preachers do.
They water
and fertilize.
Yeah,
I think we all should be doing.
What does anybody know about bamboo? How long does it take bamboo to grow?
About a week.
No, not originally. It takes like a long time for it to initially break ground, doesn't it?
One shoot will grow up.
But once it's broken ground, it'll grow. But how long does it take it to break ground?
Oh,
it's like years, isn't it?
You mean the seed?
Yeah, for the seed to grow enough to break ground.
All of those weeds grow real fast.
come to my yard.
When it starts growing, it takes over fast.
It does grow fast once it breaks, but it takes it a while to break. That's what I heard. An important element of success in personal work is perseverance. Those who persist in sowing the seed eventually bear fruit. The problem with many people is wrong perspectives and negative attitudes. It is hoped that we can maintain the positive attitude necessary to persevere until harvest time is no more. There's a business, a marketing adage. Something goes something like always be marketing, and there's one in sales and business, always be selling or something like that. Y'all heard that? Any of y'all in sales? Huh?
I've heard it. I can't remember.
Yeah, and that's the way we should be. We should always be sowing. I made that up. Any questions or comments before we move into taking action?
We need to recognize that it is not us. Doing the
rigor. Absolutely.
And so that I think that's the part we get discouraged about. But that is not us.
Uh-uh.
That power coming from God and His Spirit.
Right. Right.
It's not from us.
Right.
We can
reap the benefits because we're gaining a new brother or sister, and hopefully a new friend. And
I really think we should be both. We should be sowers, reapers, waterers.
Yeah. We should be all of it to some degree. Yeah.
Hey, Lynn.
Yes, sir.
So I had a guy come to my office one day. He was a jet engine mechanic. We were stationed in Tucson, Arizona. Yes, he was Mormon. So he was a Mormon guy. And anyway, some of the guys out there have been talking to him about their faith, and they were talking to him about Mormonism. And he came to my office. He was pretty upset. He wouldn't even sit down. He was just pacing.
Oh.
And he was very flustered. And finally, after he got it out, he sat down. I calmed him down. And the whole point was these guys that were talking to him about the Bible and how there were so many disagreements in what he believed and what the Bible taught. And he'd never seen that before. And so then he sat down and asked me, what do you think? And I said, oh, man, I'm a Mormon, too.
If you were not here last week, this is a private joke. So,
we sat down, and like in Acts chapter 8, still in the Ethiopian.
Right.
Started there and just talked to him about Jesus.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got there, and he was talking about baptism. He said, well, I don't know, let me give this some thought. He went home, came back the next day. He says, hey, Chaplain, you know, I want to be baptized. And I said, well, we can do that. He says, but I talked to my wife, and she wants to be baptized, too. And I said, well, you know, two for the price.
Yeah.
So, anyway, long story short, it took a seed of someone out on the flight line just talking to this guy about Christ.
Yeah.
And ultimately came and talked to me and ended up baptizing him and his wife. Got him out of Mormonism. And they became Christian.
Yeah. But someone else, like you said, had planted the seed.
They did.
So, as you know,
that was an easy one, actually.
Yeah.
Part, because somebody else already done
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Will we move on?
Actually believe in God. And so
they believe in God. They don't believe Jesus completely the way we do. So.
I mean, the first two people I ever converted were Mormons.
Yeah.
They were my next door neighbors.
Yeah.
And they, of course, had left the Mormon church, but they were Mormons.
Yeah. It can be done. So taking action. The first step in taking action is doing things which make for a caring congregation, because it will help to confirm our claim to be true disciples of Jesus Christ.
Lynn, I have a question.
Certainly.
This is a baptism question.
Oh, okay.
And an Air Force question. So they came and you baptized them. Could you baptize them on base?
Some of our chapels have baptistries. That one did not, so I took him down to the Palo Verde Church of Christ and baptized him down there. Of which sometimes we have them out here, and we've done swimming pools and in the desert. We've done other things, but we don't have a baptistry at Harbor Field, so if we baptize someone, I'll call the place that has a baptistry.
And the Air Force is okay with that?
Oh, yeah.
I just think these days it's sort of hard to know.
They're good.
That's awesome.
So far.
Don't ask.
I end up in prison.
Don't ask, don't tell. Bathtub or something?
No, we'd get a front end loader.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
Plastic.
Yeah.
Fill it up with water and baptize with a front end loader.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. It is our love for one another that the Lord intended to convince the world that we are truly the disciples of Christ. Our love makes us useful to the Lord. From Revelations 3:7-8, we learn that the Lord knows the true condition of His church and that He will open doors for those that can be useful to Him. If we are that kind of church, we can be used by Him to reach others with the gospel, assimilate them into the family of God, and nurture them in their spiritual growth. Only then will He open doors for us as well. Here's some questions. If we are not a place where new Christians can grow spiritually in an atmosphere of love, will the Lord lead us to souls who are seeking the truth? If we are not a place where new Christians can grow spiritually in an atmosphere of love, will the Lord lead us to souls who are seeking the truth? I'm getting some yeses and I'm getting some noes.
I mean, I don't think the place you worship has anything to do with the receptiveness of people to the gospel.
Why did you say no, Pat?
Because will the Lord lead us to souls who are seeking the
The key point is, will he lead us, if we are a group of people who, are we in an atmosphere of love, not of love, if we don't have love for each other, will he bring us souls that we can convert, so to speak?
He probably will, but not as effectively as if we were different.
Oh. I think that's the answer there.
Otherwise, you'll just say, the reason I'm not evangelistic is our church is not loving.
Exactly.
That's not really, to me, a good excuse.
It is not, but we use that sometimes.
Yeah. Well, typically, in an environment like that, you're not going to have any evangelism anyway.
It's not going to happen.
It's all self-seeking.
Yeah.
In a family that doesn't exemplify
love. Yeah.
They're all thinking of self, and so they're not thinking outside. So
and even if the Lord sends somebody, we won't see them. Right. We might not see them. So the answer is yes and no.
Speaking of love, Zachary's little friend has been with us again today.
I noticed he was here today.
I think this is his third time, and they go to church somewhere else. And so we've been about that Zachary's invited him. I had nothing to do with it. All Zachary. After the first time, we got back in the car, and I think Gary said, well, Ewan, what'd you think about it? He said, I really liked it. It's like a family at your church. I almost started to cry.
Yeah.
And I said, really? He said, yeah, it's like a family at your church. So I just wanted y'all to know that is very touching for
yeah.
a 13-year-old
yeah.
to come and say, so please continue with your family ways and encourage him, because I'd like to see if I can get his parents to come
yeah.
too.
And that's the key. If we're getting along and we're happy, not saying we agree with every little thing, but as long as we're, I hate to use this word because it's been overdone lately, unified or in unity, then he will, then things will happen. So, another question. Even if, yeah, Zach.
I think also it's really, when you talk about getting somebody to know Christ and stuff, it's really different for every single individual.
Yeah.
Because it's once you have to get to know somebody first before you can begin to get them to grow.
Exactly.
Water them the way that yeah. they need to.
Yeah.
And that's
the prayer. That's getting the dirt ready as a farmer.
You can hate the people you throw the seed to. Look at Jonah. I mean, he didn't have any use at all for the Ninevites.
Yeah.
It was the power of the word of repentance. And he wanted them all to perish. He wanted God to smite them all and send
yeah.
them to hell. He'd be real happy with that had happened.
Yeah.
He was livid that the word had that much power. He came up and pouted
yeah.
on the mountain. God, why'd you do this? Why'd you
yeah.
forgive them?
Yeah.
You know, so I think sometimes we think we don't get out of our way, but it's God's power that does that. It's not us. Now, we can be a stumbling block. We can be the rock in the field.
Exactly.
We can be the thorn that
yeah.
chokes somebody else out.
Yeah.
Like I said, the roundups.
Yeah.
But still, the power of God is what does it.
Right. Absolutely. So the first thing to do is make sure that as a church, we provide the right kind of loving and caring spiritual environment. When a congregation is filled with loving members who care for its own, it is ready to be used by the Lord to reach out and care for others. So where does one begin in trying to reach the lost? We're going to begin with friendship evangelism. Make a list of souls you would like to see taught. Making a list utilizes a very helpful technique used by people successful in all walks of life. Who uses a things to do list, either at home or at work? I used to when I worked. But so, what's the purpose of making a list?
Memory.
And you can, and as you do them, you knock them, you scratch them out, so you can see what you're accomplishing. So,
list.
So it helps us. A list will help us focus our attention upon those we hope to reach for the Lord. And who is on your list? Well, if you've been part of a multi-level marketing company, you know where your list comes from. It comes from family, friends, coworkers, neighbors, mailman, store clerk, barber, the person that serves you donuts. What all did Bill Arnold say? He had a whole list of them.
Everybody in the phone book.
Yeah. Huh?
Just say follow the 3-foot rule.
Anybody that comes within 3 foot of you? Yeah. It is suggested, though, to limit the list to 5 or 8 at a time because it can be overwhelming. And husbands and wives can, of course, work off the same list because usually they know the same people, of course. Give priority to those who are the unchurched. Why would you do that? Why would you start with the people who are unchurched? Because they're not going anywhere else, right? They're the ones probably were more open to some degree. They're easier. Some of them were raised in the church, in a church, and they're not going now, which makes it a little bit difficult. Second step is pray for these souls on your list daily. Pray that God will give you opportunities to do good for them, give you the wisdom and make the most of those opportunities, and give you boldness to say what needs to be said. Also pray that those on your list will have the opportunity to hear the truth and have honest hearts to be open and receptive to the truth. Remember, it is God who gives the increase when it comes to evangelism. We are but servants whom God can use in his providential workings so that we may work as though it all depends upon us. Let us pray as though it all depends upon God. Any questions or comments about that section? I'm running out of time, so I'm moving a little bit faster. Do things which demonstrate your love for them. The importance of this suggestion is seen in the following statement. People don't care how much we know until they know how much we care. A demonstration of love will help a person more likely to be receptive to the gospel. Our love and good works will help prepare the soil to be as receptive as possible when the seed is finally sown. What is one of the missions of Hope Medical Clinic? Why did we start Hope Medical Clinic, Luke? Serve others is the key word. Serve others, and then hopefully, show how much we care, and hopefully they'll do that. Some action steps to take might be invite them into your home for a dinner or snack. Make it chocolate, whatever the snack is. Visit them, especially in times of trial or sickness, and do things with them on a social level. In other words, simple hospitality and neighborliness will go a long way in giving you the opportunity to do good towards them. And when they see the incarnation of the gospel, they will be more likely to believe in the verbalization of the gospel. The incarnation of the gospel is the principle of the gospel lived out in the flesh, and the verbalization of the gospel is the gospel in spoken or written word. After spending time being hospitable and getting better acquainted, the next step is to invite those on your list to attend services. Be sure to spend time first in prayer, asking for wisdom to invite them in the best manner. In other words, you know, how are you going to invite them? And then asking for boldness to offer the invitation to attend. Of course, you will more likely have people accept your invitations if they are among the unchurched. But oftentimes, even the church are dissatisfied with where they are attending and are willing to investigate a different church. Yes, ma'am. Did somebody say something? Oh. Remember the survey we talked about in lesson one? From the Institute for American Church Growth, they asked the question to 10,000 people, what was responsible for your coming to Christ in this church? Y'all remember the outcome of that? Huh? The answer, 79% said, a friend or relative invited me. So just a simple invitation. So when it comes to evangelism, one does not even have to be able to teach to be effective in leading others to Christ. One simply has to be a friend to the lost. Even if we do not convert a single soul, we will have fulfilled our obligation to share Christ with others. We will have done it in such a way as to become better Christians, a better congregation, better friends, better neighbors, better co-workers, and etc. Any final questions or comments from anyone?
One of the contradictions of this is that you just have to sow the seed.
Yeah.
And you're not kind of responsible for how it grows. But then at the same time, you said you have to love or care about them. So to me, there must be a balance there of taking some recognition of when you sow that seed to try to sow it in a caring way.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it does have to follow up with that seed if you see an invitation there or see a door open. So we don't. And that's what I meant earlier when I said sometimes we just don't use that as a cop-out. You know, there is some work involved.
You know, there was a huge effort. I don't know if you remember the One Nation Under God effort years ago. But
yeah.
What they wanted to do was get the gospel message into every home in the United States.
Right.
And they had some rallies around the, you know, all over the country. And but it was put on. It was sponsored by Churches of Christ.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they did is they mailed the gospel message. It was mm-hmm. kind of a cartoon booklet.
Mm-hmm.
But he mailed it, and every house in America got it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were, from what I understand, there wasn't a huge number.
I haven't heard any figures on that. Yeah.
But I guess my point is that gospel, that seed can be sown, but sometimes it really needs a person there.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a person to care about.
Yeah. Yeah, and good thing you bring that up, because next week we're going to talk about the building the courage, how to get over your fear of rejection, and I will actually show you some tools that are non-threatening that you can either use to invite somebody to church or actually use in a Bible study. Yes, sir.
Are you pretty much done? I don't want to interrupt your class.
I got one more.
Okay, sure.
30 seconds. So next week, well, I'll have some show and tell. I don't have enough to give out to everybody, but well, I'll show you what's available and give you some websites you can go to. But on the back page, page 6, a little graphic I found a couple weeks ago, how to kill a church. In other words, things to do to kill a church. And I don't know why this one is number one on the list, but what's the number one thing? Don't evangelize. So, and you can look through there. There are other things, but so I don't know if they're in order of importance, or that's just where they started. So, anything else before Vaughn? That's all I have. Vaughn, it's you, brother.
Interrupted because Lynn talked about evangelism and tools, and I'm like, oh, that's my segue. Anybody likes free stuff? I have some free armbands, wristbands that can be a tool for evangelism. And I wear them from time to time when I'm out and about. And, you know, you go out and shake somebody's hand, and there's that wristband right there with a big scripture on it. It says John 3:17. I don't know if you know what John 3:17 says. We all know 3:16. But if you don't know 3:17, look it up. And put this on your wrist and be ready to talk about it. All right? So anybody that wants, I got a bunch of different colors. I got colors women like. I got colors men like. I got, there's a camouflage over here if you're a hunter. I got different things. So if you want free stuff, free tools for evangelism.
Okay. We'll have some more next week. Thanks, Vaughn. Thank you for your comments. Everyone have a great week.